Welcome to Mind Walk, produced at Upstart Radio for Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Radio Free Moscow, IndieMedia.org, RadioForAll.net, community and micropower stations worldwide.
This is a joke, okay? Because this is about 84% of Americans' top national security experts saying we're losing the war in Iraq. This is about all these generals that we've been showing night in and night out saying there's no plan to get out of here. There was a bad plan to end. There was a bad plan to start with. There was no plan, bad information, bad intelligence. Nothing was right. Look back at everything they said about using the oil for reconstruction money, about being greeted as liberators, about all this nonsense that we heard before. This is an opportunity for this administration, Mr. Meek, to try to change the subject. And all of a sudden, we're talking about a few political prisoners, and it has enormous ramifications. But the bottom line is this. This administration wants to talk about anything but the war or the economy. They want to change the subject anytime they get a chance to. And now we've got this debate about military prisoners. And I'm not saying it's not important, but my God, you got millions of people living in poverty. You got seniors who threaten them with their Medicare. You got no 40-some million people with no health insurance. You got stagnant wages. You have gas prices going up. You have health care going up. You have tuition going up. You have poverty rates going up. You got veterans benefits going down. And you want to talk about this one little sliver to change the subject. And you're coming up with all these new phrases again, Islamo fascism and all this other stuff. $4 billion per month, $1.9 billion per week in Iraq, $275 million per day in Iraq, $11.5 million per hour. You want to start talking about providing health care for millions of citizens? You want to talk about lower tuition costs? You want to talk about investing in alternative energy sources to reduce our dependence on foreign oil? You want to talk about what Mr. Michael wants to do with airline security and port security? We got the money. We got the money. But we're spending it in a black hole called Iraq.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizen can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals. We must guard against the potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists.
any comparison between the compassion and decency of the American people and the terrorist tactics of extremists, it's flawed logic. It simply can't accept that. It's unacceptable to think that there's any kind of comparison between the behavior of the United States of America and the action of Islamic extremists who kill innocent women and children in to achieve an objective.
The President of the United States owes this country an apology. It will not be offered, of course. He does not realize its necessity. There are now none around him who would tell him, nor could. The last of them, it appears, was the very man whose letter provoked the President into the conduct for which the apology is essential. An apology is this President's only hope of regaining the slightest measure of confidence of what has been for nearly 2 years a clear majority of his people. Not confidence in his policies, nor in his designs, nor even in something as narrowly focused as which vision of torture shall prevail, his or that of the man who has sent him into apoplexy, Colin Powell. In a larger sense, though, the President needs to regain our confidence that he has some basic understanding of what this country represents, of what it must maintain if we are to defeat not only terrorists, but if we are also to defeat what is ever more increasingly apparent as an attempt to redefine the way we live here and what we mean when we say the word freedom. Because it is evident now that if not its architect, this President intends to be the contractor for this narrowing of the definition of freedom. The President revealed this last Friday as he fairly spat through his teeth words of unrestrained fury directed at the man who was once the very symbol of his administration, who was once an ambassador from this administration to its critics, as he had once been an ambassador from the military to its critics. The former Secretary of State, Mr. Powell, had written, simply and candidly and without anger, that the world is beginning to doubt the moral basis of our fight against terrorism.
That is any civilian casualties in any kind of experience like this.
Just coming into us from Al Jazeera television, that's on Rim 14 in the booth, and is now on your screen. And this is the most recent explosion. We watched as a fireball was set off. I believe that this is live in Center City in Baghdad. And now clearly the cruise missiles are raining down on Baghdad and the early explosions have begun. Whether this is shock and awe or not remains to be seen. But certainly for people who are witnessing this inside Baghdad, it must be shock and awe indeed. These are pictures coming to us from Abu Dhabi television, I believe, and live pictures inside Baghdad. And you can hear the anti-aircraft fire and what appears at least to be more strikes by cruise missiles, believed to be Tomahawk cruise missiles, which are dropping over Baghdad. Let's listen.
Just unacceptable to think. Unacceptable to think.
Of course it's acceptable to think that there's any kind of comparison. It is obviously necessary. Some will think that our actions at Abu Ghraib or at Guantanamo or in secret prisons in Eastern Europe are all too comparable to the actions of the extremists. Some will think that there is no similarity, or if there is one, it is to the slightest and most unavoidable of degrees. What all of us will agree on is that we have the right, we have the duty to think about the comparison. And most importantly, that the other guy whose opinion about this we cannot fathom has exactly the same right as we do to think and say what his mind and his heart and his conscience tell him is right. All of us agree about that, except, it seems, this president. With increasing rage, he and his administration have begun to tell us that we are not permitted to disagree with them, that we cannot be right, that Colin Powell cannot be right. And then there was that one most awful phrase. It's unacceptable to think, he said. It is never unacceptable to think. This place is going to be a confusion. When a president says thinking is unacceptable, even on one topic, even in the heat of the moment, even in the turning of a phrase extracted from its context, he takes us toward a new and fearful path, one heretofore the realm of science fiction authors and apocalyptic visionaries. That flash of lightning freezes at the distant horizon, and we can just make out a world in which authority can actually suggest it has become unacceptable to think. Thus, the lightning flash reveals not merely a president we have already seen. It now shows us a president who has decided that of all our commanders-in-chief ever, he alone has had the knowledge necessary to alter and reshape our inalienable rights.
Simply can't accept that. It's unacceptable to think. Unacceptable to think.
This is a frightening and a dangerous delusion, Mr. President. If Mr. Powell's letter, cautionary, concerned, predominantly supportive, can induce from you such wrath and such intolerance, what would you say were this statement to be shouted to you by a reporter or written to you by a colleague? Governments are instituted among men deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government. Those incendiary thoughts came, of course, from a prior holder of your job, Mr. Bush. They were the words of Thomas Jefferson. He put them in the Declaration of Independence. Mr. Bush, what would you say to something that antithetical to the status quo just now? Would you call it unacceptable for Jefferson to think such things or to write them? Between your confidence in your infallibility, sir, and your demonizing of dissent, and now these rages better suited to a thwarted three-year-old, you have left the unnerving sense of a White House coming unglued, a chilling suspicion that perhaps we have not seen the peak of the anger, that we can no longer forecast what next will be said to or about anyone who disagrees, or what will next be done to them. There needs to be an apology from the President of the United States. And more than one. But Mr. Bush, the others, for warnings unheeded 5 years ago, for war unjustified 4 years ago, for battle unprepared 3 years ago, they are not weighted with the urgency and the necessity of this one. We must know that to you, thought with which you disagree, and even voice with which you disagree, and even action with which you disagree are still sacrosanct to you. The philosopher Voltaire once insisted to another author, "I detest what you write, but I would give my life to make it possible for you to continue to write." Think for yourselves, he wrote, and let others enjoy the privilege to do so too. Apologize, sir, for even hinting at an America where a few have that privilege to think, and the rest of us wind up getting yelled at by the president.
It is most fortuitous that this should be taking place at the end of a week of celebration of the memory of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. This nation has never, ever produced a greater citizen who stood and still stands for the principles for why we are all gathered here. The pursuit of justice, the pursuit of human rights, the pursuit of human dignity. Theodore Roosevelt once said that when the powers of state, having been mandated to reach out and to protect the interests of the people, begin to usurp the Constitution and undermine our laws, that it is the responsibility of citizens to rise up and to speak against this process and to, in fact, insist upon the changing of the guard, the changing of regime. Those citizens who failed to hear that call should in fact be charged with patriotic treason. It is important that when all of the instruments of governance collapses, we go in the final hour to the most important line of battle, the people themselves. The people of this nation, I think, and I know, are awake and are being more awakened every day. They're hearing and sensing the danger that sits on the horizon. Looking at the international oppressions that we are a part of, looking at how we have violated international humanity and law. And one day this tribunal, I hope, reach out and in its investigation look at the oppression and the illegal experiences that people in this nation are experiencing themselves. On 9/11, we were all stunned. 2,000 lost their lives. 2,000 who were innocent. 2,000 who did not cause war. And we said they were terrorists, that we should hunt them down and bring them to justice. Tell me, where for you does the line blur? When a nation as powerful as this, the most powerful in the history of human existence, and those who have dubiously come to power and who are reigning over the will of this nation, when they lie and mislead the citizens of this country, when they put before us fear and then govern by terrorism, where does the line blur for you when our sons and daughters are sent to die in foreign battlefields? Each day we claim the lives of tens of thousands of innocent men, women, and children in other places. Where for you does terrorism end, and where does it begin, and who are the terrorists? Those who would choose to detract the real meaning of this tribunal, the real meaning of this people's moment, would suggest to you that we are somehow, perhaps, irrelevant. Well, I guess Paul Revere was considered at one point irrelevant when he called for the alarm against the Redcoats. I know very well that in the beginning, Dr. Martin Luther King was considered irrelevant. I know that so many who've called to the awakening of our citizens to look at what is happening to us and to seize our rights to put us back into democratic governance. Always in the beginning, we are minimalized, marginalized, and relegated to the dustbins of history. We have prevailed before, and we will prevail again. I am honored to be a part of this process. Anything that I can do to help broaden its base, to broaden its inquiry, and to help save the soul of our nation, I welcome the opportunity, and I will so serve.
Some new casualty figures out today. 8,000 people killed in just July and August. Iraqi civilians killed. Did the president talk about that?
He tries to put a more positive picture forward, even in the face of a lot of experts, including many of our own reporters on the scene, that the situation is deteriorating rapidly. But listen to this. I'll read to you what Kofi Annan said on Monday. He said, if current patterns of alienation and violence persist much further, there is a grave danger the Iraqi state will break down, possibly in the midst of a full-scale civil war. Is this what the American people bought into?
It's interesting you quoted Kofi. I'd rather quote the people on the ground who are very close to the situation, who live it day by day, our ambassador or General Casey. I ask this question all the time. Tell me what it's like there. And this notion that we're in civil war is just not true, according to them. These are the people that live the issue. I reject the notion that this country is in civil war based upon experts, not based upon people who are speculating. I fully recognize it's still dangerous and there's more work to do. The enemy has got the capacity to get on your TV screens by killing innocent people. And that's how I learned it. I can't learn it from your newscast. What I've got to learn it from is people who are there on the ground.
Blitzer for us. Wolf, thanks. Excellent interview with the president. The president said, I cannot learn it from your newscasts. I've got to learn it from people who are there on the ground. All right, let's get to our folks then who are on the ground. Joining us this evening, Baghdad correspondent Michael Ware. He's been reporting from the region since 2001, spends lots of time outside of the green zone. Our military analyst is retired Army Brigadier General David Grange. He was a commander in the 1st Gulf War in Special Ops, stationed in western Iraq. And White House correspondent Suzanne Malveaux joins us this evening as well. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Michael, let's begin with you. You heard what the president had to say, which is essentially the good news that's out there is not getting reported. Have you found that to be true on the ground where you've been?
Oh, look, really nothing to be further from the truth. I mean, the fact that when President Bush talks about those living on the ground and he cites General Casey and Ambassador Khalilzad, I mean, these are men who could not be more divorced from the Iraqi reality. They very much live within a bubble, be it physically within the green zone or be it within the bubble of heavy US protection. And this is true even for their advisors and for the commanders and the American soldiers. I mean, they never take the uniform off. The Iraqi people can never talk to them unless through a filter. It's very different than living amongst them. And when people say that not enough good news stories are being told, you ask an Iraqi family what it is that they're experiencing. Bodies of their neighbours are showing up in their streets. Their kids can't go to school for fear of crossing sectarian lines. And that kidnapping and killings are just going on around them. Soledad?
There's some new casualty figures out today. 8,000 people killed in just July and August. Iraqi civilians killed. Did the president talk about that? 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 8,000 people killed in just July and August. Iraqi civilians killed. Did the president talk about that?
2,000 lost their lives. 2,000 who were innocent.
8,000 people killed in just July and August. Iraqi civilians killed. Did the president talk about that?
9/11.
8,000 people killed in just July and August. Iraqi civilians killed. Did the president talk about that? 8,000 people killed in just July and August. Iraqi civilians killed. Did the president talk about that? 8,000 people killed in just July and August. Iraqi civilians killed. Did the president talk about that?
That there's any kind of comparison between the behavior of the United States of America and the action of Islamic extremists who kill innocent women and children in to achieve an objective.
8,000 people killed in just July and August. Iraqi civilians killed. Did the president talk about that?
Be discussing today is one of the most controversial issues confronting our nation. I'm using as a subject from which to preach why I am opposed to the war in Vietnam. Let me make it clear in the beginning that I see this war as an unjust, evil, and futile war. I preach to you today on the war in Vietnam because my conscience leaves me with no other choice. Time has come for America to hear the truth about this tragic war. In international conflicts, the truth is hard to come by because most nations are deceived about themselves. Rationalizations and the incessant search for scapegoats are the psychological cataracts that blind us to our sins. But the day has passed for superficial patriotism. He who lives with untruth lives in spiritual slavery. freedom is still the bonus we receive for knowing the truth. Ye shall know the truth, says Jesus, and the truth shall set you free. I've chosen to preach about the war in Vietnam today because I agree with Dante that the hottest places in hell are reserved for those who, in a period of moral crisis, maintain their neutrality. There comes the time when silence is betrayal. The truth of these words is beyond doubt. Silence is betrayal.
Anything that I can do to help broaden its base, to broaden its inquiry, to help save the soul of our nation, I welcome the opportunity and I will so serve. I welcome the opportunity and I will so serve.
We do enjoy great privilege and freedom, in fact, uniquely so by comparative and historical standards. That legacy was not granted as a gift from above. It was won. It was won. It was won by hard and dedicated struggle, which doesn't reduce to pushing a lever every few years. We can, of course, decide to abandon the legacy and take the easy way of pessimism. Everything's hopeless, so I quit. Or we can make use of that legacy and work to create, in part to recreate, the basis for a functioning democratic culture in which the public plays some role in determining policies, and not only in the political arena, from which it's largely excluded, but in the crucial economic arena, from which it is excluded in principle. Now, those are not particularly radical ideas. So, for example, they were articulated very clearly by the leading 20th century social philosopher in the United States, John Dewey, who's American as apple pie in the familiar phrase. He pointed out that until what he called industrial feudalism is replaced by industrial democracy, politics will remain the shadow cast by business over society. We do enjoy great privilege and freedom, in fact, uniquely so by comparative and historical standards. So that legacy was not granted as a gift from above. It was won. It was won. Those ideas remain just below the surface, and they can become a living part of our societies and our cultures and our institutions. But like other victories for justice and freedom over the centuries, that's not going to happen by itself. One of the clearest lessons of history, including very recent history, is that rights are not granted. They are won, and the rest of it's up to us. Rights are not granted. They are won, and the rest of it's up to us.
This has been Mind Walk, an Upstart Radio production.